It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in conversation with mayors across the state to explore issues they grapple with, and we watch for themes along the way. Our next stop is Waupun, a city in Dodge and Fond du Lac counties. Call in with questions at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Ron Bishop is mayor of Waupun. Mayor Bishop, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hey, good morning, Kate. How are you today?
I'm doing well, and I'm so glad you're here. You know, we've been talking with mayors along the contours of affordable housing and water quality, inflation, workforce, other challenges facing their communities. And, you know, what is high up on your priorities to address in Waupun?
Well, I'm going to start out by bragging for a second, because you mentioned how other mayors have talked about water quality. And Waupun, Wisconsin has the best drinking water in the entire state. We have the only reverse osmosis water treatment plant in all of Wisconsin. And we even add fluoride to it. So if you are a resident of the city of Waupun, you do not need to own a water softener. And your appliances will last several years longer if you live here, because our water quality is so high. And we are bringing online later this year a brand new state-of-the-art wastewater treatment plant that is very aggressive at getting PFAS out of the water. It's going to be the first of its kind of that size in the entire country. So I'm pretty proud of Waupun and our water standards and what we are for the environment. To your question, though, the top priorities we're working on, you're right about housing. Currently, there's only one house for sale in the entire city of Waupun. And when a house goes on the market, it's selling within hours, not even days, and it's going for over the asking price. I like to tell people it's because people want to live in Waupun, and I think they should too. I love living here, but we need more housing. We're trying to acquire more land and grow the city for housing. And then also, one of the problems we've had are budget restraints and the challenges we've been having. And I'm very cautiously optimistic, but very optimistic with the deal that appears the Republican legislature and the governor are coming together with on shared revenue for Waupun. That would mean an additional $350,000 coming next year for our budget come this fall. And I could really use it. I desperately need to hire one more person at the Public Works Garage. And we would like to get the police department back fully staffed to 18 officers. And then another priority we're working on, so Waupun, our population's 11,535, and we're growing. We're growing slowly, but we're growing. And we're having some growing pains over at the fire department, because as our city gets larger and technology gets better, we have more fire calls than we used to. And so it's getting harder and harder to run a fire department strictly on volunteer firefighters, largely because the number of fire calls are going up. So what that means is fewer and fewer employers are letting their employees who are on the fire department leave during the workday to go on some of the smaller fire calls. So we don't have enough people showing up to attack a fire during the day. That and the fact where Waupun is located, we're 20 minutes from Fond du Lac, we're 17 minutes from Beaver Dam, right? So there's a lot of people who live in Waupun and maybe work in Fond du Lac, Beaver Dam, Horicon, or Mayville, or something like that. So they're not around on the smaller fire calls to respond. So we're looking at some sort of a hybrid approach of a few full-time firefighters. Most of the fire department will still be paid on call. They're technically called. I hate that term because they only make $2,500 a year. So to me, they're volunteer firefighters. And then EMS service. Like, what do? Do we take over ambulance service? We have a contract with a private ambulance company, but they're starting to miss ambulance calls. Like, what are people's demands on that? And so there's just a lot going on in Waupun. And it's, you know, our city's growing, and these are things the city of our size go through. And I'm excited to be the mayor, though, and help usher our city through it all.
Wow. Well, thank you for taking us on a tour of these tension points. And we're going to unpack a bunch of these items. I'm going to reintroduce you here, talking with Mayor Ron Bishop as part of a series of conversations with community leaders as we look at the most pressing issues that communities around Wisconsin face. You can join in at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Mayor Bishop, one thing that hasn't come up yet is Waupun, home of three correctional centers, including the maximum security prison with 1,000 inmates. The prison is contending with overcrowding and understaffing, as you're well aware, recent weeks-long lockdown. How are those challenges affecting your community?
You're right. We have three correctional facilities in Waupun, as well as the Department of Corrections Pharmacy. And not only are the, what makes Waupun unique from other communities, most of the correctional facilities in Wisconsin are out in the country somewhere. The three prisons here in Waupun are within our city limits. And I don't know if you've ever driven past the Waupun Correctional Institution. Mm-hmm. It's right downtown. Waupun. Yeah, the address is literally 200 Madison Street. It's right there. And there's houses around it. So people would ask me when I would travel around the state and introduce myself, they're like, what is it like to live in a city with a prison? I'm like, well, we have three of them and we don't even think of it. Like the daycare my kids went to is in the backyard of the prison. It's just, it's a way of life. And for a lot of people who live in Wisconsin, they'll make the comment, the prison is in Waupun. To those of us who live here in Waupun, the prisons are a part of our community, and that includes the people who live in the prison. Like, all of our churches in Waupun have a prison outreach. Our ministers, our pastors, our priests, they all put some time in every week. They go to the prison. They talk to the inmates. When we are in church on the weekends and we pray for our community, they're oftentimes they're included. And I get it. A lot of those people in Waupun, especially because it's a maximum security prison, did something really horrible. And some of them are just terrible people who will never get out. But a lot of them are people who made a mistake in their youth. And we're hopeful that they get an education when they're in the prison. There's a school in there that I toured a couple of weeks ago, and I learned a lot. And it's really neat. And hopefully these are young men who screwed up, they get an education, they can come out of Waupun Correctional and then have a successful life. But you're right about the staffing issue. It's, I don't know if it's a coincidence or not, but our state representative for Waupun is Michael Schraw, and he happens to be the chairman of the corrections committee down in the state legislature. He's fighting really hard to get some pay raises pushed through in this next budget. Waupun Correctional is running at a 50% vacancy rate on staff. And I just don't think either political party is taking corrections as important and as seriously as they need to.
I want to jump in here. Governor Evers is asking state lawmakers to raise pay, as you mentioned, for correction workers in the state. The starting base pay for corrections officers, $20.29, that would go to $33 an hour. What would that type of raise mean for your city?
Well, I think what it would mean is, the first thing it would mean is more people would go work at the prison, which would help with a lot of the younger guys that work there, because they are getting ordered into so much overtime. We're losing people because they're missing out on their kids' lives. Mm-hmm. We need to stabilize the correctional facilities, not just for the people who work there, but also the public safety. It's a good thing for Waupun because a lot of the people who work at the prison are city residents or live near the city. And if they're making more money, obviously that's good for our local economy. But the prison means more to Waupun than the economy. It's the oldest prison in the state of Wisconsin, and it's a really important part of the city of Waupun's history. You know, we try to downplay some that we're the prison city, and we like to talk about ourselves as the city of sculpture because we have these seven outdoor sculptures in Waupun and we have this neat art history and we're located next to the Horicon Marsh. Like, there's a lot going on in Waupun that's not based on the prison, but at the same time, that the prison, it's the oldest one in the state and it means a lot to the city's history. And the reason it's here is the early founders of Waupun donated the land to the state to help get it started as an economic development driver to create some jobs. But they've got to get the pay up. The governor's correct. Representative Schraw's correct. Like, no one wants those jobs. They're tough jobs. They can be ugly jobs at times. You're in a no-win situation. You get criticized from all sides. And I toured the prison about a month ago, and I give the men and women who work there a ton of credit. They're doing a good – if bad people are in there, it's keeping us safe on the outside. And I think they get overlooked by a lot of people. And as the mayor, I've been trying to draw attention to that because I think correctional officers are some of the unsung heroes in law enforcement. And maybe I'm a little too Waupun on that, but I do feel that way. And I've been trying to draw attention to it.
We have Waupun Mayor Ron Bishop with us as we check in with mayors across the state. Mayor Bishop elected the position last year. Call in with your questions for a mayor, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Waupun's our next stop, talking with mayors across our state, the community located on the southern branch of the Rock River. Join the discussion. Call in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have Waupun Mayor Ron Bishop, who is here. Let's turn to shared revenue, the state sharing tax revenue with local governments. I thought it was really interesting you point out that Waupun's land base being tax exempt, 50% of it is that way, with prison facilities, churches, school property. What are you seeking out of shared revenue?
Honestly, we're just seeking enough money to provide basic services. So when I first got involved in city government, my first go around, I was in my 20s when I got on city council. And here's a perfect example. Our public works department had 17 employees in 2002. We're down to 13 in 2023. And we've added streets. The city's growing. And we've got a grant from Governor Evers. So we're actually building a new senior center, which is one more building we have to maintain. So what we did is, and I, in my weekly mayor's column, was very open and honest with the residents of Waupun. We went through and we cut stuff out of the budget. And some of the things we cut were like painting the street, the lines on the streets and the no parking zones in Waupun. People are starting to notice it because the streets don't look like they used to. And so what I'm very, very hopeful for is with the shared revenue increase, we'll have enough money to just offer the basic services that people who live in the city want. I'm not asking for millions of dollars. It's just, I would love to hire another person at the public works department so that we can make sure the streets are plowed and that they're salted and they're safe, that we can take care of the city owned facilities for our seniors and the people in the community who use them. You know, and we have several parks in Waupun. I think we have 18 parks scattered around the city. But one of the things that make it a nice quality of life community are the parks. And when you reintroduced me, you mentioned we're on the Rock River and several of our parks are along the river. And I think if kids are out fishing and playing in a park, they're not in trouble doing something somewhere else. And they're off those darn devices and playing video games. And I think that's a healthy thing for our community. And I think people who live in a city, they live in a city because they want those services. And I'm glad that the governor and the legislature are coming to an agreement on that, because we just needed help. You know, I'm not one to complain too much, and I don't want to be a big spending tax increasing mayor. But at the same time, police officers aren't free. Firefighters aren't free. Like, everyone needs to get paid, and we're not looking to waste the money. We're just trying to provide basic services so that Waupun's always a great community to live in. That's what I'm looking for.
To that end, we've seen Republican lawmakers proposing restrictions on the use of this additional funding to focus on police, fire, EMS, other quote core services. What do you think about putting restrictions on the funding?
I don't love it, because I think in a city like Waupun, we make good choices. At the same time, the restrictions they're putting on it is where a lot of the help is that I need anyway. So it doesn't affect us that much. I know a lot of the restrictions are more targeted to the larger cities. I think when you're the mayor of Waupun, I can get frustrated with a city like Milwaukee. And I love Milwaukee, but like, they've got the hop. How many people are riding it? They create diversity offices. How many people are working there? What's it costing the taxpayers? In a city like Waupun, we're just trying to paint the double yellow line down Main Street and mow the lawn and provide simple basic services to the residents of the city. So I mean, the restrictions, I think, are more aimed at some of the larger cities with the bigger budgets. I joke, you know, I'm in Waupun, we have a Dutch history, and every good Hollander knows how to stretch a dollar. And I take it as a compliment. We're a very conservative, frugal city. We don't waste money, and I can justify our budget to any state legislator on either side of the political aisle. So any additional funding coming in, I'm glad to take it, because we're not going to waste it. It's going to go straight into basic operations that people want, and that they live in a city. They want the garbage picked up. They like that we suck the leaves up off the curb in the fall, that kind of stuff.
Mayor, you mentioned the $5 million state grant funding to pay for a new senior center. Can you explain a little bit about why you are targeting this neighborhood investment fund grant in this direction?
Yeah, we outgrew the current senior center. The current senior center in Waupun is actually an old furniture store located in downtown Waupun. And there's a bunch of things with that. First of all, we outgrew it. We have a very active recreation department. and a very active senior citizen to part under that. Waupun, like everyone else, has a growing population, and we want to take care of our seniors. They've put in their time. They help build Waupun, and we want to have a very successful and active senior center. We just outgrew the space. The other thing going on is most of the seniors drive themselves to the senior center. So downtown Waupun will have 50-some cars down there, and all of these people are at the senior center, and that traffic is getting in the way of the other businesses trying to thrive downtown. So with the neighborhood grant, the previous mayor, Julie Nickel, had applied for it. We got the grant just before she left office, which was a really cool way for her to leave office. We're hoping to break ground in August, and it's going to be a senior slash community center. And I think it's really important for Waupun. So during the day, the building can be used by our seniors for all the different programs, from yoga to foot care to all the stuff the seniors care about. But in the evenings, it can be used by the community as a whole. I think that's super important, both for physical and mental health of people roughly my age. How about parents in their 30s and 40s? You know, you go to work, you get your kids home from school, you feed them dinner, you run them to dance or practice or church, youth group or whatever. Wouldn't it be nice to have a place to go in the middle of January when it's cold, dark, and miserable and walk a mile or two on a track or play pickleball or a game of pickup basketball? I think one of the things going on in our country with the mental health crisis is people need to get out of their house in the winter. They need to stay active. They need to meet people and have friends. So I'm very excited about it. But at the same time, it's another building we have to maintain, which is why I'm really happy with the extra shared revenue, because we'll have to have a city employee taking care of it. But we're very thankful to the Evers administration for awarding us that grant. And we had the Secretary of the Department of Administration here a couple of weeks ago where we showed it off and took her to the current senior center. And she got to see firsthand how crowded it is. So I think she was really happy to see that this money is not being wasted. It's going to a really good cause. And we have the need in Waupun, and we want to take care of our seniors.
We have Waupun Mayor Ron Bishop with us as we talk about pressing issues facing communities across the state. We look for themes, and you can join in along the way in the discussion. 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. I want to circle around to housing once again. You know, there was a study saying that Waupun needs about a more 1,100 affordable homes to meet expected population growth by 2040. You know, what are you working on to expand affordable housing?
We've got a few projects that are going on. We've bought some land and we've annexed it into the city. And so what we've got a couple of different phases going. We are targeting a location on Highway 26 on the south side of the city for more multifamily high density housing, which, and I hate the term low income, it's affordable housing. I'm glad you used that word. We're looking for people who are like our first year, second year teachers, an apartment that they can afford as they're starting out their career and paying off student loans. The other thing we would love is we're lobbying our legislature, and our Senator Dan Fine has been very supportive of this. We'd like to be able to have more use of TIF districts for residential. Currently, you need like 70% of a TIF district has to be commercial. What we would love to do is if we can use the TIF law to help offset the cost of infrastructure, we have available land in and around Waupun for residential development. And that can be more starter homes for younger families. The other thing is we've been growing and expanding with like condo style housing. Mm-hmm. And the theory is we get the older people to move into the condos, and that opens up houses in Waupun for younger people. But there's a demand to move here because Waupun, it's like I said, we've got great water. We're the seventh safest city in the state. We've got good schools. It's a city people want to live in, but we need to get the housing so that people can actually move here.
Really quick, we have to go here, but you had this Facebook video last fall showing off the new vehicle charging station near downtown. How's that going?
Hey, there's actually a few Teslas that have been using it. I was a little skeptical on it, but we were excited to start it. And my thinking was we're halfway between Madison and the Fox Valley. So people who are traveling, maybe their car needs a charge. Let's get them downtown Waupun. They can plug in the car, walk our shops, have a cup of coffee, maybe buy something, but it's another way to get people into downtown Waupun and hopefully spend their money here and keep our city rocking and rolling.
Mayor Bishop, thank you for joining us.
Hey, it was an honor to be on. Thanks for having me.
Ron Bishop is mayor of Waupun, elected to the position in 2022, previously on its city council, former chair of the Republican Party of Fond du Lac County. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Colon cancer is rising among young people. That is from a recent American Cancer Society study that also found these cancers diagnosed in people under age 50 tend to be more aggressive. Call in with your questions about colorectal cancer, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. William Hall is a radiation oncologist at Frederick Hospital and an associate professor of radiation oncology and surgery at the Medical College of Wisconsin. Dr. Hall, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, starting with the American Cancer Society study findings, that colon cancer among people under 50 growing, expected to continue that way this year by nearly 10%. How do these findings reflect your own observations of caseloads?
I think they're directly correlated in the sense that we in the clinical management space are seeing more and more patients under the age of 50 and oftentimes under the age of 40 being diagnosed with colorectal cancer, which is a very distinct shift. It's not something that we have been used to historically. And so we are certainly seeing these results manifest in our clinical practice.
The natural question is why? Why are cases rising, especially among younger people?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, it's really unknown, but this is, an excellent example of how scientists around the globe are working very hard to try and figure out why we are seeing these rates go up so significantly in younger patients. And like any scientific question, we start out with a hypothesis as to why that may be. And there are some overarching hypotheses that we are examining as to what the cause of these rates of colon and rectal cancer in younger patients can be. I would say there's three sort of leading hypotheses right now. The first is obesity and sedentary lifestyles, which we have seen rise over the past several decades, particularly in younger populations. And that has been linked to the development of colon and rectal cancer. We've known for a long time that obesity is a contributor to colon cancer. So that certainly could be a cause. There are other hypotheses that changes in diet, for example, diets that are high in processed meats or diets that are not rich in things like fruits and vegetables, those may also be contributors. And finally, there may be other factors that we don't yet appreciate. There have been some that have hypothesized there could be a dietary additive in our food that we simply don't know exists or contributes significantly to colon or rectal cancer. And that might be something consumed in a higher propensity by younger populations. And that's something that we are looking into and many others are looking into. And finally, there's some potential hypotheses surrounding something called the microbiome, which is a composition of bacteria that exists in our intestines that's extremely important physiologically. And there's some that have hypothesized that changes in that composition because of antibiotic use would be contributing to this.
I thought that was really interesting. I'm glad you brought that up. What about antibiotic regimens, especially in childhood? And some of these other hypotheses, what might be the link of it happening even as early as childhood?
Correct. That is something that we have seen a significant increase in the use of a variety of antibiotics in childhood. And we are just beginning to understand the influence of the gut microbiome on a whole host of medical conditions. And there's just a tremendous amount of research ongoing in this area. But there's a significant possibility that use of antibiotics could in somehow, some way influence that. It's not to say that, you know, antibiotics aren't helpful. They're tremendously helpful and they are, you know, curative and really, really important for treating a variety of medical conditions. But it is a hypothesis that's out there regarding why we may be seeing this change in incidence.
So with the rise in these cancer cases, just drilling down a little more specific, are you noticing more rectal and bowel cancers among younger adults? What any type of trends here in the particular type of cancer?
Yeah. So interestingly, what we're specifically focusing on here is a collection of cancers called colorectal cancers. And there are two different types of cancer that are grouped epidemiologically together. And there's colon cancer and rectal cancer. And those are just two cancers that occur, one in the colon and one in the rectum, but all within the large bowel, which is primarily the cancer that we're seeing this increasing incidence in. So we are definitely seeing an increase in particularly rectal cancers. I would say is where we're seeing in our practice probably the most significant increase in younger populations. And those are cancers that are occurring in the lower portion of the large bowel, typically the last 15 centimeters or so of the large bowel.
Talking about the rise of colorectal cancer among younger adults especially, Dr. William Hall with us, radiation oncologist at Froedtert Hospital in the Medical College of Wisconsin. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Hall, let's turn to detection. The American Cancer Society saying when colon cancer is detected in early stages, 90% of people survive 5 years or longer. What is the best way to catch it early?
Yeah, this is such an important question and part of the reason why I'm so happy that your group in the show is drawing attention to this. Like you said, colon cancer is so curable if it's caught early, which is wonderful. You know, there are many cancers that we can catch them very early and they're still not very curable. But this is one that, fortunately, if it's caught early, it's extremely curable. There are multiple screening strategies now, which is great. It used to be that the colonoscopy, which many people sort of dread and put off and don't want to undergo, was the only option for screening, but there are other options now that can be done in a patient's home that they can actually send in a sample of their stool. And those are very effective screening methods. But this topic is particularly relevant for younger patients because screening is currently only recommended by the American Cancer Society for patients that are over the age of 45. Yet epidemiologically, we're seeing patients much younger than that being diagnosed with this cancer. So it's important that patients bring up symptoms that they're experiencing to their primary care physicians so that they can undergo screening or diagnostic examinations early so that they can catch this cancer at a very curable stage.
What are the early signs of colorectal cancer?
So the most common ones would be changes in your bowel movements. And these are things that patients are often reluctant to discuss or they don't readily, divulge to their physicians or healthcare providers. But what we often see are changes in the color and the consistency of bowel movements. So for example, if a patient's bowel movements suddenly become very dark in color, black in color, and have almost a tar-like consistency, that's a concerning symptom. Other symptoms can include things like blood in the stool. And if you're regularly seeing blood in your stool, there are many benign non-cancerous causes of blood in the stool, but it's important that those are evaluated by a doctor and that cancerous causes are ruled out because blood in the stool can be a common symptom that we can see in the early stages of colorectal cancer. Some other symptoms can include things like unintentional weight loss. If you're suddenly starting to lose weight and you are not dieting, you're not exercising, you're not trying to lose weight, that's a very concerning symptom and something that you should have evaluated by your physician. And then, there are vague symptoms, things like fatigue and weakness and a persistent feeling that you have to have a bowel movement even though you just had a bowel movement. Those are, again, symptoms that not necessarily always related to cancer, but are something that might be helpful to have evaluated by a doctor.
Let's bring on a caller now, Paula in La Crosse. Hi, Paula.
Hi, good morning. Well, this is kind of serendipitous, but I'm on my third colonoscopy next Wednesday. I'm 60, and I do have the precancerous polyps. I have a family history. So my question is, I just want to make sure for my children, I was told they should have their first colonoscopy at the age of 40. But then I kind of remembered now, do most people should get it at 45? So I guess I just want to make sure for guidelines that they know when they really should have their first colonoscopy and what the latest recommendations are.
Paula, thank you so much. Dr. Hall.
Yeah, great question, Paula. So this is something I would definitely encourage your children to discuss with their physicians, because there's all sorts of nuances to the cases. So it's hard for me to know precisely. One of the first questions has anyone undergone genetic testing? If you mentioned there's a family history, are there any genetic predispositions to colorectal cancer in your family?
I know my mother's brother died of colon cancer, but I don't think it was early. It was not early stage. I mean, I think he was in his maybe late 70s, early 80s when he died. That's all the family history that I know of.
So okay. No genetic testing yet. Yes. Okay.
I have not had the genetic testing, but that's a great idea. Yeah.
Yeah. There's some really convenient, easy genetic tests that your physician can refer you to a genetic counselor, and they can talk to you about options, which can be really, really helpful. But usually we recommend patients, if they've had young onset colorectal cancer, they start undergoing screening, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 years before their immediate family member was diagnosed. Now, that's a very rough approximation and estimate. It differs based on symptoms and genetic predispositions and other contributors that really only a doctor can evaluate with an individual patient. But it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 years before somebody was originally diagnosed. So it sounds like 40 would probably be a good age for your kids, but also they should discuss it, you know, with their physician to come up with the best age for them.
Paula, thank you for the call. Radiation oncologist William Hall with us, fielding questions about colorectal cancers as the American Cancer Society reporting rising caseloads among younger adults. Call in with a question, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We learn about the latest developments in colorectal cancer, the third most common cancer diagnosed in our country. Be part of this conversation, calling in with questions, your thoughts. The number is 800-642-1234. We have Dr. William Hall here, radiation oncologist at Froedtert and the Medical College of Wisconsin. Dr. Hall, let's explore these at-home tests a little further here, and we'll name names. Cologuard, made by Exact Sciences, the company headquartered in Madison. How effective are these new tests compared to a colonoscopy?
You know, they're quite effective, and they're very, very useful in the sense that some patients are quite reluctant to undergo a colonoscopy, and that's probably where they're by far the most helpful, because they can be done in the privacy of your home. They don't require these sort of lengthy preps that people often don't want to undergo before a colonoscopy, but they're not the entire solution. So it's important that patients realize that they really need to be willing to follow up on the results with their physician, and they need to be willing to undergo additional tests as required, because sometimes there are equivocal or results that need follow-up from these sorts of at-home tests. But they're very, very helpful, and they provide an excellent option, particularly for patients who do not want to undergo a colonoscopy.
You know, there is that scary aspect, that uncomfortable aspect of colonoscopies that you might encounter with patients. What do you tell them to help them through it?
You know, I usually tell them what the vast majority of people say, which is by far the worst part of the process is the prep, where they have to drink a certain amount of liquid to clear out the colon the night before. And that by far is the worst part of it. You know, I usually try to provide them some encouragement as well, that it's a very, very helpful test that we know results in early detection, which results in higher cure rates. And it's something that we do not have to do that often, which is really, really reassuring. Usually patients can have a colonoscopy and most of the time they don't have to have another one for several years and sometimes as long as 10 years. So that's oftentimes reassuring as well.
Well, Dr. Hall, we're going to have a little bit of fun here. Saturday Night Live recently produced a skit with actor Woody Harrelson that parodies a Cologuard ad. And here's part of the skit.
Hi, I'm Cologuard, a non-invasive way to screen for colon cancer at home.
Oh, yeah, my doctor ordered you.
That's right, because I'm safe, easy to use, and I find 92% of colon cancers.
Okay, cool. How's it work?
I just need to collect a sample. So open me up and, you know, go inside me.
Inside you?
Yeah, just go inside me. It's okay. I like it.
All right, so the skit gets at how awkward it can be to talk with doctors about going to the bathroom. How important is having these types of conversations?
They're very important, and I completely recognize and agree with the fact that it's awkward for patients to discuss this with their doctors. It is very important, though, that I think doctors and healthcare providers initiate these types of conversations with patients because, you know, they're absolutely right. It is a very sort of awkward thing that many patients don't bring up and they don't want to discuss. So it's helpful for doctors to really bring this up as a question for patients. Just a simple question, you know, how are your bowel movements? Do you have any concerns when you go to the bathroom? Is there anything different? Has anything changed? And patients are usually pretty forthcoming with things like that. And, you know, the reality is, I always say this to patients, doctors hear this every single day. So there are very, very few things that you could tell a doctor that is going to surprise them or they're going to find it unusual or uncommon, because we talk about this with patients every single day. So it's important to bring these sorts of symptoms and concerns up to your doctor. And if you're worried about something in your body or there's something changing in your body, it's really important to discuss that with your healthcare provider.
Okay, so colonoscopy happens. Paula mentioned precancerous polyps. If you do find something in a colonoscopy, especially these polyps, what can you tell us about them?
Yeah, I mean, it all depends on the type of polyp it is. It depends on all sorts of characteristics of it. So essentially what will happen is the polyp is removed, and it's removed at the time of the colonoscopy, and then it will be examined usually under a microscope with another doctor called a pathologist that examines the polyp for different types of characteristics. And there's all sorts of things that the doctors will look at with regard to, you know, the actual composition of the polyp. And then depending on what the polyp looks like under a microscope and depending on the characteristics of the polyp, there will be different follow-up schedules recommended. So some patients will be recommended to be seen back in, you know, 4 to 6 years. Other patients will need to be seen back in 4 to 6 months, depending on the characteristics and the location of the polyp. So it's very individualized.
Talking with Dr. William Hall, radiation oncologist with Froedtert Hospital and the Medical College of Wisconsin, as we look at the rise of colorectal cancer. And your questions front and center at 800-642-1234. Dr. Hall, there is some good news in the research findings that colon cancer has been declining among adults 50 and over since a peak in 1985. Do physicians understand why cases have been declining among this age group?
You know, that's another great question and a little bit perplexing. I think the predominance of the reason for that is primarily because of the successful screening programs that have been implemented. And the vast majority of patients over the age of 50 know about the importance of colonoscopies. They they undergo colonoscopies at their recommended intervals. And so I think that's been very, very helpful for early detection, detecting precancerous lesions, and really, you know, ideally detecting cancer early when it can be cured at very, very high rates. And it's sort of, you know, it is perplexing regarding the incidence distribution here and why we're seeing this shift toward younger populations like we had talked about earlier. But yeah, mostly colon cancer screening with colonoscopies has been attributed to that.
So let's look a little bit further here into new medications, future technologies that are emerging for the work that you're doing in surgical. What do you see, you know, on the horizon or that you're able to do now that couldn't be done in the past?
Yeah, so that's actually a really wonderful area of advancement that there's been a tremendous amount of change in the past 5 years. So we have seen a total revolution of colorectal cancer treatment, particularly in the past 5 years, and particularly for rectal cancers, which are the more distal, lower cancers that are still grouped within the spectrum of colorectal cancers, but are treated very, very differently. So I am a radiation oncologist. I'm not a surgeon, but I treat a lot of patients with colon and rectal cancer, particularly rectal cancer, with something called external beam radiation therapy, which is a super common treatment for cancer. It's used in about half of all cancers, and it's used in many different types of rectal cancers. Historically, patients with rectal cancer had to undergo very large operations. So they sometimes needed an operation called an APR, where they had a permanent colostomy or a bag on their abdominal wall. In most cases, that's for the rest of their life. And that was a very distressful thing for patients. Mm. And what we are seeing now are potential non-operative management strategies emerging. And what that means is that we can give patients very sophisticated radiation therapy, which are invisible x-rays that they don't see or feel, that are focused on the area where their tumor is. We do that with MR guidance here at the Medical College of Wisconsin. And we have some emerging technologies as well that will potentially help us with that in the future.
Dr. Hall, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you.
Dr. William Hall is a radiation oncologist at Froedtert Hospital and an associate professor of radiation oncology at the Medical College of Wisconsin. For disclosure, Froedtert and Medical College of Wisconsin, they're business sponsors of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.